We're going to have an intro.
Right there, we're live. There's our intro.
Oh, okay. That was an intro.
Welcome, everybody. This is Ancient Aliens Worldwide Live, and I'm going to share this out. So everybody share this out, share this out. I'm going to share this to Ancient Aliens. We are on Orion Rising right now, but I'm going to share it to Ancient Aliens Worldwide. I will let Mandy continue while I turn my camera off and start doing some producing here in the background. So, Mandy, take it away.
You got my eye look. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We are now doing part two with Gary. And hopefully... Well, yeah, I know you're Gary Osborne. They all know you're Gary Osborne. And your name is underneath, so you don't forget it.
That's good.
So, welcome back, Gary. And we're going to go all over the place again today.
Thank you, Mandy.
How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm looking out there because it could be storming soon. We might
lose connection.
So if you see these blowing, well, I don't know if they will, but they might be blowing a bit.
All right, we'll be fine.
Yeah,
we'll be fine.
Good to be here. Feel good.
Busy? How's the book coming?
You keep asking that, don't you? I'm getting there. It's a bit of a time, but it's getting there. At least I'm still working on it. I'm not leaving it or anything. I'm still working on it.
You won't be long.
Busy with it.
I think the way I've got to know you is that you're not going to come out with one book. You'll come out with all three at the same time.
Yeah, it's like that. Waiting for a bus, you know.
And they all come out at the same time.
Actually, you could be right. There could be three books, but I'm working on two at the moment. I mean, I do have another book that's kind of, almost finished anyway. But that's about the Great Pyramid and Giza. You know, it's a standalone kind of book away from the code.
Right.
But the two books I'm working on at the moment are the two follow-up books to the book I co-wrote with Jim Peniston, the Rendlesham Enigma.
The Rendlesham Forest, yeah. So let's go to Rendlesham Forest and the binary code, which is where your stuff that you were already working on collides with that.
Yeah.
You then co-write the book, The Rendlesham Enigma, with Jim Peniston.
Yeah.
And now you've carried on doing your work that you were doing beforehand. So,
yeah.
Can we have a look, if you're around there, a great and masterful Leo? Could you put up the number 5?
Graphic.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right, go to you.
Yeah, these are the... Well, this is the binary code message. And you've got 7 sets of coordinates there. You've got one of them, which is put on there twice. I mean, it's the higher Brazil coordinates, 52, 89, where it is at the top there, and you've got it at the bottom as well. And it's saying origin and the same coordinates, but there's 7 in all. And Jim Peniston, and we went through this in the last interview. Jim Peniston just asked me to look at these coordinates to see if I could find any additional information from them. And he sent them to me on the 2nd of February 2011. And as soon as they came through, I got straight on them. I wanted to see what those locations were in Google Earth. And it was kind of dramatic to see the cursor move into these ancient sites where there's kind of pyramids and or like Mount Taishan, sacred mountain there. Sedona, the Greek island of Naxos, which is where the Patara of the Temple of Apollo is, and it looks like a gateway, because that's all that's left of these ruins. It looks like a large window, if you know what I mean, and it's kind of pointing to the Atlantic. So, and what's the other one?
Giza.
Sedona, Caracol, the pyramid, Caracol. The Mayan pyramid at Caracol in Belize, yeah. So I was really intrigued by this, and he asked me, could you find any additional information? I thought, well, what could I find with this? Unless I kind of just look into the history of these sites. But then he told me he had a dream about 23.5 degrees, which is what we were talking about in the last interview. And he thought they were temperature regions on the planet. And I said, no, it's the Earth's axis obliquity tilt angle. And I wondered about these coordinates, and I wanted to see them on a map projection of the Earth, on a two-dimensional map projection of the Earth altogether. And when I did that, I just wondered, you know, because I thought, what would happen if I was to connect them with angles, you know, with the lines to see what the angles were? Because that's what I did with these all these references to the Earth's axis angle in all these paintings. Right. That's what I found. So I thought I'd try the same with this. And the first one I found was Nazca to Giza, which was 23.5 degrees exactly. And I mean, it wouldn't be like that on a globe because you'd have to work with azimuth angles, you know.
Right.
But on a flat map projection of the Earth, it was 23.5. And then I thought, you know, someone's pulling my leg here, you know, give me a chain, as they say here. And I thought Jim Pennison was up to no good here. You know,
having a laugh,
I thought
yeah.
he devised it himself. And then I found another 23.5 angle from Nazca to Caracol to the Belize Mayan Pyramid, which was perpendicular to the first angle. And then I started finding these other angles, which was 51, which you would identify with the Great Pyramid, the side angle, the slope angle of the Great Pyramid. Even though it's 51.84, this was 51, but it's what you would identify the Great Pyramid with. And the angle 11.75, which is half of 23.5. So that's kind of associated with the axis angle.
Absolutely.
And then I found that all these coordinates were drawing up the Great Pyramid, a 2D triangle image of the Great Pyramid in cross-section, which was centred on the Greenwich Prime Meridian and the equator. And the angles were pointed inside the pyramid as well, pointing to the internal chambers we know of, and a third one, which was we don't know of. I mean, I'm sure there's a few people on this planet who know of it. Maybe it may have been breached at some time. But it's pointing to a third chamber that we don't know about. And that got me intrigued because we know that recently there's been this muon particle scanning being done on the Great Pyramid, and they found a void, a large void inside, which is like, it looks like another grand gallery above the one that we know, and it's pointing upwards, and it could be pointing to this third chamber that's at the centre of the pyramid, you know. So, yeah, the coordinates are pointing to this other chamber. But it's not just that. There's lots of other themes that have come up out, that's emerged out of the code, and it's also pointing to the Sphinx. And this is where Manu Saves the Day's work comes into it, because he's been working. He's got a book out. Wait a minute, I don't know whether you can see me. No, you can't.
No, Leo, can you take it down for a sec, please? There it is.
That's the book by Manu, Under the Sphinx.
Right.
Okay. That was.
And he's finding something under the left front leg, right?
It's the left. Yeah, the left forepaw.
Right.
And he's saying that there was a chamber there. Is a chamber there, but he said that there was an archive of records placed under there. And he said that may have been breached, and it may have led to the first dynasty. The knowledge that was inside that casement underneath the Sphinx, he says that might have kick-started the first dynasty, you know, the knowledge that was kind of contained under there, under the Sphinx.
Apparently they've done lots of archaeological digs around that area, but they've never done it in that vicinity and in front of the left paw, have they?
Yeah, well, that's debatable, because there's this wooden board, there's these wooden boards in front that they walk on in front of the Sphinx, and there was some talk of them being watched at night, and they take up this walk board, and they look underneath it, and they're underneath the Sphinx doing something. But that's hearsay. We don't know that for sure, but it's kind of hearsay, and they're doing something under there. But Zoe Awas, the director of antiquities there, the former director of antiquities, he says there's nothing there, it's nothing under the Sphinx. But then you get people saying, "Oh, we would say that," you know. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't believe a thing the old guy said.
No, but
for the new people.
Yeah, but going on with what I was saying about this, what Manu's been working on, because he's found textual evidence that there was something under the Sphinx. You know, it's in the Egyptian record, ancient Egyptian record. He's seen, I mean, he's read the hieroglyphs that kind of point in to underneath the left paw of the Sphinx. And he's saying that this is something that must have been placed there. That's right, because he's talking about Mehit. He said it was the goddess Mehit. The Sphinx was the proto-Sphinx, the original Sphinx, was a lioness goddess called Mehit, or Mehit. I don't know how you pronounce it properly. He's good at that. And he's saying that that was there before the Sphinx, and then the Sphinx, the identity of the Sphinx was stolen by Khafre, the pharaoh Khafre, who had it recarved in his likeness, you know, the head, because it was a lioness's head.
Right.
And people say that when they look at the Sphinx, it looks like a little pimple on its body, the head, you know, it looks too small.
Right.
So it must have been recarved at some point, and they reckon it was recarved in Khafre's image. He took over the Sphinx as his own monument, so it's like identity theft there.
Crazy.
And the Egyptologists have always said that it's Khafre's. He had it built, he had it constructed, or carved.
Right.
Out of limestone. Although
that's kind of not old enough to what is coming out the age of it now anyway. Maybe it was carved as something completely different at the very beginning.
Yeah. But as I said, Manu's been working on this, and the code, the binary code, what emerges from it is actually pointing to the left paw of the Sphinx. And it does so in such a way that, you know, it has to be deliberate. It had to be intended. That whoever devised the code had sort of factored that in there. So it's pointing to what Manu's working on anyway. And but that's one of the themes that's come out of the code, but there are others. And what I wanted to talk about today was how the code authenticates itself.
Right.
And it authenticates itself through this universal constant called the fine structure constant, which is a number. And if any of those digits in that long number, it's 12 digits. If any of these digits were changed, we wouldn't be here. You know, our universe kind of depends on the fine structure constant being the number it is. So, yeah, you're in darkness now.
I'm in darkness.
Yeah. So
I'm trying to find the definition for it so that we can read it out.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you.
In physics, the fine structure constant, also known as Summerfield's constant, commonly denoted by weird Greek A, is a fundamental physical constant which quantifies the strength of the electromagnet interaction between elementary charge particles. That one I actually understood.
Yeah. Let me just get to... I was going to read some of it out. Yeah, so what is important about this is that it's turned up in the code, right? What emerges from the binary code. And, you know, it has been said that a signal or message received from somewhere else in the universe has to include a mathematical number that's so special that it leaves no doubt in making the receiver aware that the message was intentionally sent by an advanced intelligence. Okay.
Right.
And I came across the words written by, you know, the late astrophysicist and cosmologist Carl Sagan. It was from his book, The Cosmic Connection, which was in 1973, as long ago as that. So, and he says, on page 205, he says, he discusses ancient civilizations and the possibility of contact or intervention by a technologically advanced civilization in prehistory. And he contemplates what might be the most compelling data to turn up in an ancient source. Such as a myth, folk tale, or legend that would warrant considerable attention and perhaps even convince us of this intervention. So I'll read the quote from him, and he says, "There is only one category of legend that would be convincing. when information is contained in the legend that could not possibly have been generated by the civilization that created the legend, if, for example, a number transmitted from thousands of years ago as holy turns out to be the nuclear fine structure constant, this would be a case worthy of some considerable attention. So if it was found in a message, communication from an advanced intelligence, that's what that would be, what would make him sit up and take notice, you know, people right. like him. And it's turned up in the binary code message. But it does so in such a way that it just it leaves you stunned, because it's as if the intelligence whoever devised the code has said, okay, so you want the fine structure constant, okay. Well, we'll give you that number, but we will show that number how it will be in 2018 when it's been determined by our physicists in 2018, a 12-digit number, and we'll do it in such a way that it will bring a new kind of major discovery about Giza. It will bring to light get the Giza pyramids were arranged or sited, placed to the phi ratio. Yeah.
Right.
So it's not just giving us the phi structure constant, it's giving this major discovery about Giza, with the pyramids being
and the placement
placed to the phi ratio, you know. So, and I'll get to the graphics of that later, because, you know, it's phenomenal really how all this has come about. And I'm trying to share it with people, but it's a difficult subject for people to get to grasp, because it's all mathematical. And as you know, a lot
well, you're
of
doing, you've been doing a grand job of being able to explain this, and then when we bring the actual graphics up, and then you explain it again in that way, it works, you know. Just doing it with numbers would freak me out.
Yeah,
but we've talked for a long time about this, and it's all extremely fascinating.
Yeah, the way it unfolds, this is what I want to talk about, is the way I found it, you know, the
right.
kind of sequence of events that kind of happened, that led me to that conclusion that what they were showing us was the fine structure constant. But this code originated in 1980, so claims Jim Peniston. He said he received it in 1980 when he touched down. What he says was an identified triangular craft of unknown origin. And he touched one of the symbols on there, and he had this download of binary code, which he saw in his mind's eye. And he couldn't get it out of his head until he wrote them down the next morning. So that was in 1980. But the code, what emerges from the code from that year, points to this 12-digit number in the future that will be determined by our physicists in 2018. It's the same 12-digit number, and I mean, that's a hell of a lot of numbers, right? Everything
yeah.
in sequence, and you know, it's twice as much as you would, you know, the numbers in the lottery. So,
right,
it's kind of off the scale. You know, the odds against it is off the scale. So, yeah, and it does, and as I said, it does so in such a way that it brings us this knowledge of the Giza plateau that the pyramids were placed in respect to the phi ratio there.
So how does the fine structure constant number present itself in the binary code?
Yeah, which is what I'm going to say, because it's kind of complex and it's difficult to try to convey to people. You can't... you've got to go through the stages of how I found it, really. So I'm going to start... I should start with... When I first began with a code, I was talking to this guy, a friend of mine named Richard Hopkins, and he said that, you know, the GPS coordinates at Giza, he said they change all the time because of the tectonic plate motion, you know, and because, you know, the outer crust or shell of the Earth is something like 100 kilometers deep, you know, or 60 miles
yeah.
deep. But it's cracked like the shell of an egg, you know, into 15 plates, what we call tectonic plates.
Right.
And of course, the magma underneath, the heat from the radioactive like processes underneath, is what's making them move away from each other and to each other. And they're always in motion, these tectonic plates. And they've worked out what the velocity is you know. And the African plate is what we're concentrating on here, because that's where Giza is situated, on the African plate.
Right.
And of course they butt up against each other, and they cause mountains to rise, or hills, or ridges. They cause volcanoes. It's where, you know, it's the fault lines are. It's where these plates are all kind of connecting again, and they're pushing against each other, and they'll go under one another, and or they'll go above. And sometimes they'll get stuck, and then something's got to give. And when it does, that's when you get tsunamis, you know, with a crust underneath the sea. So it's all kind of all this geological movement and motion going on all the time. So you have to take that into consideration when you're looking at Giza and you're looking at the coordinates there. So our GPS coordinate system, it's fixed. The grid system that we use, the coordinates to you know, mark certain places on the planet, that's fixed. But the plates are moving very slowly underneath, so the coordinates are going to have to change each time. You know, you let's say the
how much do they reckon they move a year?
As I'm going to get to that, but let's take the center of the Great Pyramid. I mean, it's moving. And the coordinates will change every year. I mean, seven or eight decimal places, you know, only the last digit or last two digits will change over a period of time. But yeah, the African plate is moving. I found that the African plate is moving in a northeast direction at 2.15 centimetres a year. It's not much. I mean, it's only that much a year.
Right.
But over... Yeah. Over the 38 years that I'm talking about, between the code and when this number was determined, it's 38 years, that's like just less, I think it's like 0.817 metres, just less than a metre, but that's still considerable.
That's a lot.
when you're looking at the coordinates, because as I said, even over a year will change. So, yeah, so it's moving at 2.15 centimetres a year. It's moving in a northeast direction at 51.46 azimuth degrees.
Right.
And I found that, and this is kind of hard to believe really, but it is there, it's on the internet, you can find it, any information on the African plate. It's been moving in that consistent fashion for like 100 million years.
Oh, wow.
And you'd think, oh, there must be something stopping it. It would kind of slow down or whatever. Something would be in the way and it would stop. But that's what they say. They say it's been consistent over 100 million years. So, yeah, 2.15 centimetres a year. The angle is 51.46 azimuth in a northeast direction. And if we put up the first, if we put up the first graphic...
He'll be back in a minute.
Yeah, I was using, to work all this out, I had to use the most reliable and accurate tectonic plate motion calculators. And this is one, we'll put this graphic up and it will just give you the information there about the African plate in Giza.
So, but, I know it sounds like a stupid question.
Yeah.
But I think personally that the pyramids have been there 126, minimum 126,000 years.
I guess a lot. I never looked at it like that. I've never really thought about that many years.
Hold on a minute, Leo. So, the Nile used to be at the end of the... There was pathways leading to the Nile, right? The Nile is now something like 200 kilometres away from the pyramids. And for those to have moved that far, it takes 126,000 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
And so, how come... The pyramids aren't like moving as well.
Well, they're all on the same plane, aren't they? So they're not. They're all moved together with the African plate, you know. So the measured distances between the pyramids won't change, just because everything remains the same. It's just
not,
the plate.
Well, it's not direct. It's how far away is the plate then? The tectonic plate, because there are areas where there's tectonic plates and they open and close and move all over the place, don't they? So it's further away, obviously, from there.
Yeah, we're on the delta. It's on the apex of the Nile Delta. That's where Giza
right.
is. And the Great Pyramid is actually on the apex of the Nile Delta. And the Nile Delta is actually 1,000 times the Great Pyramid, the size of the Great Pyramid.
Interesting.
You know, because it's like a triangle.
It sounds like a stupid question, but it's just, you know, the tectonic plates, I never know which way they're moving. So it's like...
Yeah, well, with this, I don't have to concentrate on any all the other plates. I mean, I just have to concentrate on the Giza, on the African plate where Giza is situated on. So I don't really know that much about the other plates, but I kind of looked into this and kind of researched it. And
okay, so number one, please, Leo. The first one. There we go.
Yeah, so there you find that that's the UNEVCO plate motion calculator I used. You got the model, you got the latitude and longitude, which is the Great Pyramid in 2022. Okay. So I worked all this out. Manu was kind of really assisted me on this to find out what the coordinates of the Great Pyramid were at ground level. And you've got the azimuth, right? CW from north is 51.46.
Before you go any further, what does azimuth mean?
It's the angle. It's azimuth's angles which take into consideration the curvature of the Earth.
Okay, thank you.
The site name at the end there, see, it's Giza. Okay.
Yeah.
And you've got the velocities there, which are different. They're not 2.15, but if you take those, if you split the difference between them, because they're in different directions, you'll get 2.15 centimetres, which is what I've written at the bottom there.
Oh, wow.
You see?
Yeah, that makes sense.
For example, 2.4 centimetres, take away 1.9 centimetres is 0.5 centimetres, divided by 2, 0.25 centimetres, plus 1.9 equals 2.15. So it's 2.15 centimetres.
Makes sense.
A year. Okay, so that's the... that was the best calculator I could use, really, the most reliable one. And you know, you can take that down there if you want. I did know that I did know about the African plate, but it was Richard Hopkins that said, no, you really have to look into it. And it was Robert Bovell who looked into this before me. But he said it's negligible, you know, the change. And I didn't really think that much of it until Richard Hopkins persuaded me to look into it, and I had to, because I discovered that the coordinates, because they originate from 1980, we have to project the coordinates we work out today at Giza back to 1980, and that's how I found out about the fine structure constant. You have to look at Giza how it was in 1980 with the coordinates. Okay, so you know, you look at the African plate moving at 2.15 centimetres a year, you've got to backtrack, you've got to go back to 1980, where the monuments of Giza were, you know, considering the coordinate grid system.
Right.
And see what the coordinates of each key point of the pyramids was, and the Sphinx and that. And you find out it was different back in 1980. And actually... when you do look at Giza in 1980, it provides us with lots of strange measurements between the kind of meaningful, but only in 1980. I'll give you an example. The Great Pyramid is at 29.97, I think it's 29.797. 198, I think this is what Manu had worked out about these coordinates of what the centre of the Great Pyramid is. And of course you've got 30 latitude, okay, you've got the 30 north latitude, and it's something like 2,000 metres away from 30 latitude.
Well, oh wow,
when you look at Giza in 1980 and where the Great Pyramid was from the 30 latitude, is exactly 5236 royal cubits. And that's the measure of the royal cubit, 0.5236 royal cubits. Okay, no, sorry, 0.5236 meters. But that's one royal cubit length. So what it's doing is, what the code was doing, was telling us the length of the royal cubit, the real length of the royal cubit, which people have been trying to figure out all these years. They don't really know what the exact precise length of the royal cubit is, but the coordinates at Giza in 1980 provide us with the measure of the royal cubit in that
That's
distance.
That's amazing. Right.
Because it's 1,000 times one royal cubit, the distance.
Right.
In royal cubits from the Great Pyramid to 30 latitude. But it would only happen in that year. But it's like this fine structure constant. It only happens in 1980 that this latitude that I'm going to talk about generates the fine structure constant. In 1981, the numbers changed, so it wouldn't be the same. And 1979, right.
It wouldn't be the same.
In 1980. So in the whole history of humanity, it's only 1980 that the numbers in this latitude produced this fine structure constant that comes up 38 years later.
That's crazy.
So that gives, when you look into this and you think perhaps that's the reason why the Rendlesham incident happened in 1980.
Because it's
providing us with this fine structure constant number to authenticate the code or authenticate this message being sent from an advanced intelligence. And they've used the latitude that was passing through Giza in 1980 to generate this number that would be come up 38 years later in 2018. What I mean is, it's like the code was given to Jim Peniston in 1980 because it relates to 1980,
right.
Because you've got to look at Giza in 1980 and find this
exactly.
number that comes up 38 years later.
It's the key.
Yeah, so let's get into how this all kind of unfolded and how it all got to this number. So I looked at the Nazca coordinates from the code, and I don't know what image it is. I think it might be number 4 or 5. No, number 4, I think.
Number 4, yeah.
No, that's not it. I'll have to go further along. No. You see, those are the Nazca coordinates there. See, that's why I highlighted it.
Right, do you want to try number 6? Is that the one?
Yeah, that's
you
it. That's it.
Those
are the Nazca coordinates. That's where it's located where the Nazca lines are. And I measured from there to Giza, and I found that the distance was exactly, well, not exactly, not yet, but 7,687 miles. So the next one, if you just go to the next one, that's where that 7,687 mile distance lands, okay? So if you was to go into Google Earth and measure from the Nazca coordinates a circle, that kind of, you expand the circle so that it goes through Giza, that exact 7,687 mile distance will land on the Great Pyramid at that point, okay? Which is not in the centre of the pyramid, it's over to the west. But it's actually over to the west by exactly 80 royal cubits, okay? Which is an integer, I mean, it's a whole number. So it's 80 royal cubits.
Right.
But then I found, and the reason why I thought this was important about this 7,687 mile distance, because it's already in the public domain, that number. And it was part of the theory by this guy named Stanley Mailer, who said that if you was to multiply that distance by phi, you would get the circumference of the Earth in miles. Okay, so that was part of his theory. And I thought that Whoever devised the code knew that that number would be in the public domain, and that we could use that number to then pinpoint this location on the Great Pyramid. And it's important. I mean, it doesn't look right, because you'd think, well, if it was going to pinpoint anywhere on the Giza Plateau, it'd pinpoint the center of the pyramid. It's,
you would think.
It's just on the west face by 80 royal cubits, as I said. And you think, well, why there? Okay. And it doesn't matter about his theory, about Stanley Mailer's theory. It's just the number that whoever devised the code had used that number. And in fact, his theory, he first came to working this out in 2002. And, you know, that's 2 decades after the code was given to Jim, you know?
Yeah.
So whoever devised the code knew that this Stanley Mailer would come up with his theory in 2002, you know, 22 years later. But it's using that number so that we then would find that number in the public domain and know that it's significant and that it points to this location on the Great Pyramid. So, and I made sure it was exactly 7687 because I looked at the meter distance, and which is like, is it 12,729? I can't remember. Maybe I've got it on there. Yeah, 12,371. Yeah, I mean meters. Okay, so that I pinpointed it exactly at 7,687 miles. Yeah, and then I measured down. Okay, I measured down from that location 540 royal cubits, because it then intersects the Giza diagonal line, which the code was also pointing at. I think if we go to the next, yeah, that's just showing the coordinates from Nazca to that point on the west face of the Great Pyramid. You've got the 2 coordinates there, and it's that meter distance exactly. Okay, that's the Vincenzi distance calculator I use, which is accurate, and it's accurate to within like 0.5 millimeter. That's how accurate that
is. Oh wow, that's accurate.
Yeah, so you know, I mean, you've been using all these calculators to make sure that, because I've gone through everything meticulously, okay? I'm not just pulling numbers out of the air. If we go to the next one, that's where it is on the Great Pyramid. You're looking at an aerial view in Google Earth, you know, this kind of rendered image of the Great Pyramid. And that point on the west face is exactly 80 royal cubits from the centre, you see?
Yeah.
So, and you think, well, okay, it looks like a nondescript location, but actually it's very special, as I'll show in a moment. If we go to the next one. Oh, that's the royal cubit. That's the measure of the royal cubit I was talking about, 0.5236 meters.
Which, go to the next one then.
If you have a 1 meter diameter circle, and you know that the circumference is pi, then and then you divide pi 3.1416 by 6, then you'll get the royal cubit. Okay, if you go to the next one. Yeah, so that's the distance between the Great Pyramid and the third pyramid in the south, the smaller pyramid. And that distance is exactly 1,413.72 royal cubits. There's a reason for this, but let's go to the next one. So yeah, I'll go back to what I was saying. The images are not really in sequence of what I'm kind of conveying here, but we'll go back to this. I measured down from that point on the west face of the Great Pyramid to the Giza diagonal, which is a timeline at Giza, which I will talk about in another interview. I mean, there's just so much in this that's emerged from the code.
Right.
But it's exactly 282744 meters. It's got it in centimeters there, but it's 282.744 meters, which is exactly 540 royal cubits. So that's an integer number. I mean, it's a whole number, 540. So, and 540 is 1/48th of the precessional cycle. So that's a meaningful number. it's what they call a processional number.
What does that mean?
Well, procession is the cycle of the cycle of procession is 25920 years according to the ancient estimate, and what it is where the axis is tilted at 23.5. It draws this large circle in the above, which is takes 25920 years to complete. And that's the zodiac age. That's what accounts for all the zodiac ages.
Right.
You know, like the age of Aquarius. And, so these are precession numbers. The 540 is a precession number because it's 1/48th the cycle. Okay. So I knew that was important. But of course, it intersects the Giza diagonal. And then you've got this latitude beneath, okay, which is 29.9766248. And that is the latitude that becomes special. Okay, so if you go to the next one, that's just confirming that distance, which is 282.744 meters, which is 544 cubits. Okay, with those between those coordinates, you know, the center of the Great Pyramid and where it intersects, the latitude that passes through intersecting the Giza diagonal. Okay, we'll go to the next one. That shows you proof that this is 540 royal cubits. Okay, so 282.744 meters divided by 0.5236 meters, one royal cubit. So that's 540 royal cubits that distance. Okay, you carry on. That's the fire ratio. Okay, there's the proportions 1 and 0.618. So if you carry on, this will all come together in a moment. There. So there's 540 royal cubits from the centre of the pyramid down to this golden, what I call the golden cut latitude, because that latitude is what divides the distance between the Great Pyramid in the north and the Third Pyramid into the fire proportions of 1 and 0.618. So there's the golden mean rectangle there on the right, which shows you the golden spiral to show you that these are the proportions of fire. Okay, and see the golden cut latitude. That's what's really important. So what I'm saying is the Nazca coordinates, through that distance of exactly 7687 miles, points to this point on the west face of the pyramid. It's not here, it's not in this graphic.
But we saw it in the last one.
It doesn't matter, because that latitude that's running through the centre is what is important as well, okay? Because when you measure down 540 from that, from the centre of the Great Pyramid, that latitude that's running through there, you measure down 540, and that leaves a distance of 873.72 royal cubits, okay? Which goes through the centre of G3, that distance. And if you then divide 873.72 by 540, you get 1.618, which is the phi, which is the golden mean number.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so look, but our emphasis here is on the golden cut, which divides that distance between 1 and 0.618. Okay, if we go to the next one. And again, this is the other way round. If you was to measure up 540 from the centre of G3, that latitude going through there, you get another golden cut, you see, and if you look on the right, you'll see that it's inversed, you know, the rectangle. So, and that's aligning with the south base edge of G2, the second pyramid in the middle. So you can see that the pyramids are arranged to the phi ratio.
Totally.
So if we go to the next one. Yeah, this is that image again. So it's just showing you that I measured down from that point on the west face. That's where it comes into, you know, it becomes important. Down to where it intersects the Giza diagonal. And that latitude there, the golden cut, it then emerges, see?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all the phi ratio. It's the major discovery in itself, but that actually did come from the code, because if you follow the sequence of how I came to this, from the Nazca coordinates that then points to that location on the west face of the pyramid, and they measure down 540, then you get that latitude, the Golden Cut latitude, and then you find that that's what divides this distance, this north-south distance, into the fire ratio at Giza.
Right.
But anyway, what we concentrate on now is the latitude, the Golden Cut latitude, and the numbers in it. Okay. So if you go on. Yeah, that's just another image just showing you the fire proportions. Okay.
Next one.
Yeah, and that as well. That shows you the fire proportions as well. It shows you the two Golden Cut latitudes.
Totally.
Yeah. So that's
the important one.
So this is an important one because it's showing you how significant that point on the west face is of the Great Pyramid. Because, let's just take a drink of water here. As I said, from the distance from the Nazca coordinates to that point on the west face is exactly 7687 miles, all right? And then you got from the higher Brazil coordinates that were found in the code all the way to the Sphinx. And it's a special point on the Sphinx, I should mention. It goes through that point in the west face as well. And then you've got the Naxos coordinates, the Greek island. The Naxos coordinates, if you measure from there, or draw a line from there, to the Unas pyramid, which Manu has been working on, it goes through that point again. And when I said earlier that Manu is involved in all this, you know, he is. He's what he's been finding. The code is already kind of pointing to. Okay, so it's as if.
Yeah.
And I did say to Manu, you know, I found something else that kind of implicates your work. And he said, "What are you telling me?" He said, "We all kind of work into a script."
You know, looks that way. I was just thinking that it's madness.
But whoever devised the code is it. As I say, this code is a temporal anomaly, you know, it's a time anomaly. They must have known, whoever devised the code knew when these events would take place in their past, but in our future, you know, from 1980. And they knew that Manu would be working on the Unas Pyramid, which is in Saqqara, but that's that line, it goes all the way through that point on the west face and goes to Saqqara, to the pyramid that he's been working on, that gives him information about the Sphinx and what's under the Sphinx. Right?
Oh my God, that's incredible.
So as you can see, what is important about this image is that three sets of coordinates that were found in the binary code message, when you draw lines from those locations to Giza, they all pass through that west face point of the Great Pyramid, which is bringing it to, you know, is bringing it to our attention. But that's how I found the Golden Cut latitude anyway, as you know, because the 540 Royal Cubits down from that point.
Right.
So if we go to the next one. Yeah, so those three sets of coordinates I was talking about, that's those there. Higher Brazil, the Nazca Lines in Peru, and the Pultara at Temple of Apollo in Naxos, Greece. So those are the three coordinates that point to that location on the west face of the Great Pyramid. Have you got the next one?
Nobody I know believes in coincidence, so this is all done on purpose.
Now, here's another important one because it shows you the fire ratio geometry, the golden mean geometry that kind of derives from that point on the west face of the Great Pyramid, see?
Yeah.
Using those golden spirals. You can see that the heads of the spirals are all kind of in proportion with the boundary or the, you know, the base perimeter of G2 in the centre there.
100%.
And so you can see why that point on the west face of the Great Pyramid is important there, and that's why it was being pointed to. And as I said, you go down and it intersects the Giza diagonal timeline at that point, see? And that is where the Golden Cut latitude is. So if we go on further. Yeah, that's another image just showing you the Golden Cut latitude there. Which you've already seen, but it just shows you the Golden Cut latitude is what divides the distance between the first pyramid, the pyramid in the north and the third pyramid in the south, in sort of fire ratio proportions. And it's the golden cut that does it there, see?
Yeah.
And if you go to the next one, so I'm making my way to this. Right, now, the distance from the south base of the Great Pyramid to the Golden Cut latitude is at exactly 320 royal cubits. And I mean, I've looked at all this meticulously, all the measurements using the distance calculators, the accurate Vincenzi distance calculator, and the map length distance is at exactly 320 royal cubits. The north edge, the north base edge of G2 there, that's 70 royal cubits to the Golden Cut, just south of it. See that? So it's 320 and 70 royal cubits. And keep that in mind, 320 and 70. Okay, we carry on. That's upside down. South is at the top there, north is at the bottom. But I'm just showing you that if you take that number in the Golden Cut latitude there, and then you've got the 320 and the 70. I'm showing you that because that's the sequence of numbers that you use to calculate the fine structure constant number.
Oh.
Okay, so, yeah. Those numbers in the Golden Cut latitude there, 29.976.6248, if you multiply that number by 320, and then you divide that the result from that by 70, you get the fine structure constant number that was determined in 2018 to the 12 digits. And actually, it's the they call it the inverse fine structure constant number, because what you do is you then divide 1 by that inverse structure constant number, and it will give you the fine structure constant, you know, the actual number. But anyway, they always give out the inverse number first.
That is cauliflower brain stuff there. I'd love to have seen your face.
No, I'll tell you how. I'll tell you about that, because it will really bring it home why this all works. If you go to the next one, now that's Carl Sagan's quote, okay? Because we can go over that again now that we're getting to this. You see, and he said, transmit from thousands of years ago, as holy turns out to be a nuclear fine structure constant. Well, really, it is, because you're looking at Giza, which is thousands of years old.
That's true.
So whoever devised the code is like saying, oh, okay, you want the fine structure constant in a message. Well, here it is, but it's going to be found through looking at Giza, the Golden Cut latitude at Giza that generates this number that will turn up 38 years later. And he said this would be a case worthy of some considerable attention. So if we carry on.
You think?
There's the number. See it in red? One. Yeah. See the number? It's the inverse fine structure constant. It's 137.035999084. All right? 084. Okay. Now, when I first discovered this about the Golden Cut latitude generating this inverse number, I was only relying on the determination that was made in 2014, okay?
Right.
And because they make a new determination every 4 years, and then they'll, on that fourth year, they'll then publish it 6 months later. So I was still relying on the 2014 determination of this number, and the last three digits were different. It was 139, okay? So it's 137.035999139. But I knew that the Golden Cut latitude had generated the number 137.035999908. Okay. And then you can get the last digit if you multiply. You can use the numbers 32 and 7, by the way. Okay, not just 320 and 70. You can use the numbers 32 and 7. So if you divide 32 by 7, then you get 4.571285 574 or something like that. And that number, all you have to do is multiply the numbers in the golden cut latitude by that number, and then you get all that number, which is 137.035.99084. All right? But as I said, I was looking at the 2014 determination, and the last three digits were 139. So I thought it had only been to six decimal places, right? And while I was writing the last chapter, when I was writing all this up about that golden cut latitude generating this inverse fine structure constant number, I was writing about it being, as I said, 137.035999139. And I thought, well, it's 2019 now, because this is when I was writing that last chapter. I was writing it from April right. to June in 2019. And I thought, surely that number, the new number, the new determination, must have been published round about now. And I looked at Wikipedia. I went on Wikipedia on their fine structure constant page, and the new determination was up. And it was exactly 137.035999084. Which had just been...
I mean, wow.
Which had just been determined in 2018. Okay, it had been determined at the end of 2018 by Code Data, which is the they publish all the universal constants, all the new determinations. And so I was gobsmacked, you know, I thought I already knew about the golden cut latitude generating a number, but as I said, I was relying really on the 2014, the previous determination. And so the last three numbers were wrong. And then this new determination comes up, and it makes those last three numbers correct.
Correct, exactly. Bingo.
Yeah. So if we go on to the next graphic. There it is. That was what was up on Wikipedia. The 2018 Code Data recommended value of alpha, which is that's what the fine structure constant is. It's denoted with A, alpha. And it gives you the fine structure constant number. If you divide 1 by the 137.035 number, then you get the fine structure constant there, which is 0.00729735, 693. But at the bottom there, can you see it? It's 137.035999084, and that last number there, the 21 in the brackets, that is what the what they say, you know, is the difference. What I mean is the 084, It can be either 21 less or 21 more. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
That number. But that number there is what the golden cut latitude running through Giza in 1980 generates. And that came up 38 years later in 2018.
Absolutely mind-boggling.
When you see it for yourself, when you get a calculator and you take the numbers in the latitude 29.9766248, and then you multiply it by 320 or 32, and then you divide the result by 70 or 7, and you get that number that you see at the bottom there. It's phenomenal.
Well, yeah, that's when you do your little happy dance around the kitchen and your brain explodes, because how the hell is that even possible?
I know. I mean, I've lived with this now for a few years, and it's
yeah,
I'm still in awe of it, but yeah. If you go to the next one,
I hope everybody's understanding this.
Yeah, so am I, because it's a difficult discovery to kind of convey to people, because no one likes math. No, all anybody's seeing here is numbers, okay? And I think, oh, that just right. pissed me off.
Right. And why this is important, guys, to understand this and put it into perspective is, and this is everything that Gary is showing with all of the math, is that he said this over and over, so this is why it's very important. Whoever gave Jim Peniston the code in his brain from the spaceship in 1980 had to know that the tectonic plates and the position of where the Giza Plateau and everything else that he was telling you about, High Brazil and all these other places, where they were in 1980, right then at that moment, but moreover, where they would be in 2018 as well, so that the mathematics would work.
That's
and
right.
that they would discover this exact mathematical equation which unlocks unprecedented amounts of knowledge.
Yes, it does.
And this is what Gary is showing. I know it's math, so some of you are probably not liking the math. But that in a nutshell is as easiest and as simplest as I can explain to you what it is and why this is so freaking mind blowing that you guys have no idea. I'm sorry, Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, so that they knew, whoever devised the code, whatever intelligence it was, knew when the African plate with that line that divides the phi ratio would merge with these numbers, in that latitude. They would know when it would synchronize, that line would synchronize with those numbers in that latitude. And they knew it would happen in 1980. Now, the important thing here is as I said earlier, if you look at the if you look at that line, the numbers in that line in 1981, they won't be the same. The last couple of digits will be different. And if you was to look at that, the numbers in that latitude in 1979, again, the last two numbers would be different. So they wouldn't be generating that same number to 12 digits. Okay. It only happens in 1980. It only happened in 1980. And in all the history, in all our history, it's the only year when that latitude running through Giza, which divides the distance into the phi ratio, would generate that number 38 years in the future.
And that was exactly the 1980 in Rendlesham Forest.
Yes.
Was where Jim was as an airman on the military base.
I was about following to say the lights, same thing.
Yeah, following the lights, went, found a spaceship, walked up, touched it, and got this code in his head, his binary code, that he wrote down, that that Gary has translated, and figured out the mathematics using other people's work, where they were saying this is where we are and positioned in ratio to that at this time, and then realized if you go back to when the code was implanted into his head, that was the key to solving the entire mathematical equation.
Yeah, he wrote down 16 pages of ones and zeros, okay, which from which those coordinates emerged. Three of them pointing at that location on the west face of the Great Pyramid, from which you measure down to find the golden cut latitude, which generates the fine the inverse fine structure constant in 2018.
So they had to have known about the drift of all the continents of the entire Earth. And
especially
the mathematical,
especially African plate,
Especially the African plate, but everything else, you know, that you like High Brazil, where that was, in relationship to that. So they had to know where everything was, and then now remember that Gary said 22 centimeters per year.
It's 2.15 centimeters.
Or 2.15 centimeters per year is that African plate, which is where the Giza Plateau is. You see it on the screen, is moving. And if it's off by 1 year, then the mathematical equation doesn't work.
That's right. It doesn't produce the golden cut latitude. Doesn't produce the 12-digit number that came up in 38 years. And the thing is that you've got to look at it. You've got to take this into consideration as well. It happened. Okay. What I mean is that number was published in the public domain at the same time I was writing the last chapter of that book about the very subject. It's as if someone's looking over my shoulder from the future.
Yeah, and knew that it was going to be in the public domain for you to find.
Yes.
So it was literally given in 1980, knowing that it wouldn't actually be discovered completely until 2018.
Yes. And the thing is, people saying, ah, the code, you know, why did Jim sit on it for 30 years? Why didn't he come out with it, you know, earlier? And really... As a, you, to decode this, to decode the code, which is the coordinates, to decipher it, you've got to use all these tools that would only become available years later. I mean, I'm looking at the map of Giza, and I'm find out all these coordinates and everything at Giza and make the measurements between the pyramids, the Sphinx. I had to rely on the Glenn Dash Foundation map survey, which is the most reliable and most accurate. And that was completed in 2018, actually, the same year that this generated when the fine structure constant was when it was determined.
Yeah.
So all that data about Giza, which was completed in 2018, and which is the most accurate data that I could use to find out all these measurements between the pyramids and everything, and then these GPS coordinates. 2018, I mean, that's 38 years after the code, but you would need that to be able to decipher it, to decipher Giza, which, you know, from what has emerged from the code.
Why was 2018 so poignant in this then?
Because of the number that was determined, but not only that, it was the year when the mapping of the survey mapping of Giza was completed by Glenn Dash.
Okay.
Which gives us all the GPS coordinates we need.
And, so it wasn't available before 2018.
No, and you see, the thing is that, you know, they say that the center of the pyramid is the light speed numbers. You know, they say it's 29.97.
Right.
97245.5.
458.
Yeah. Meters. And it's not, because Manu, as I said, Manu, who consulted the Glenn Dash data, and he actually knew Glenn Dash, and he worked it out that the center of the Great Pyramid at ground level, which is how you would measure these distances between the monuments, he said that it's not that number, but if you were to round it off, it would be the first six numbers of the light speed numbers.
Kind of close.
Yeah, it's kind of close, and it won't be at that light speed number. The latitude running through the Great Pyramid won't be at that number until the year 2562. Because, as I said, the African plate.
That was about to be my next question, right? Yeah.
Because the African plate is moving up, and then the Great Pyramid will synchronise with the light speed numbers in 2562.
And how will that change the Golden Cut latitude and everything? How will that change?
No, I mean, the Golden Cut, that's all past now.
That's set.
What I mean is, it won't. If you were to look at the latitude numbers in the Golden Cut latitude now. They would be different, and they would generate perhaps the first five or six numbers of that number. No, you're probably more than that, but it won't give you the 12-digit number that was determined in 2018.
So the only time that actually comes into it is 1980.
1980 is the only year, yeah.
And that's exactly when.
And what is ultimately the? What is ultimately the? The actual, what's the takeaway from this? What are they showing?
Well, what I've discussed today with this number, it's the only way the code authenticates itself through that number. As I said, Carl Sagan did say if it turned up in a communication from an advanced intelligence, it would make us sit up and take notice. Well, that's the
way. So what are we noticing?
So that's the way the code authenticates itself. But there's so much that's emerged from the code that has nothing to do with the fine structure constant. I'm just saying that's the way it authenticates itself.
Right,
that's the way it would make people take it seriously, okay?
It's your ding, right, it's your ding-dong
and
moment.
The reason that is important is because Carl Sagan, who was one of the guys who was creating this information disk that went out to the universe itself trying to make contact with aliens, said if somebody wanted to make us take notice, they would more than likely have to come up with this particular code in a message for us for us to take notice. And then in 1980, someone got that code.
Yeah.
That gave the exact code that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like, I have questions. They've now gone. So, Leo, if you'd like to take over, I'm going to go for dinner.
Wait a moment. Look, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this as well, because Manu, we were discussing, you know, who or what devised this code, okay? And he said, you know, it looks like it's been devised by a computer, you know? But a computer that's got some kind of, it's able to manipulate time, you know, that's, like as if some quantum computer in the future is kind of worked all this out. Yeah. And so, and then he said to me, and I'll read this out because he sent this to me in an email or message. And he said, Gary, I think there is too much money being made with aliens and UFOs to let that go and move over to trying to understand a message from our own future, especially if that message ends up advising us that AI ended up cancelling humanity and we should change course. Imagine Metaverse and Matrix makers backing off the next economic revolution that transforms society from a real world that likes to escape occasionally to permanent residency in a fake, completely controlled world. So it's much easier to pitch aliens from another world than to admit that we're making aliens of ourselves and the machines become the new normal. So then I said that your question, I said it seems to be based on a probable scenario that he felt needed to express. He said he was simply saying, because I was talking to about this to someone else. I said, Marnie was simply saying that in general, people would rather focus on the extraterrestrial alien hypothesis than the possibility that UFO-UAP phenomenon is instead related to our own technology, which is fast developing at an exponential rate, i.e. quantum computing, nanotech, DNA manipulation, genetic engineering, and sim creations, etc., all of which could easily lead to a future post-human AI hybrid species or intelligence, like Jack Sefardi, this is what he said. It was him who came up with the post-human AI hybrid scenario. He said, us from the future hypothesis, which has found a way to manipulate time. For example, sending information back into the past from the future, the Rendlesham binary code received from a drone craft, or even visiting our past or present. So,
I think it's definitely something to actually. I mean, I think most of us are thinking the same thing anyway, and most of us are aware of that kind of stuff. But I think it's a simple answer to a very complex question.
I needed to say that because it's just one of the things that we've been discussing, and it's kind of frightening, really, when you think about it. If that's what the future of humanity is going to be, you know, that we're all going to be half machine or computerized in some way, you know.
Yeah.
So, but the reason why that was said, reason why it was discussed, is because the code and what emerges from it, it looks like it's all been done from a computer program, but from the future, because it has to know when certain events took place. Because as I said, when I've found things in the code, what emerges from it, it kind of makes an association with what's happening at the time when I found it. You know, so
do you want that to stay up? Was there any more?
No, the reason why that was on there, could you just put it back up a moment? What it's showing is that it's like the phi ratio keeps repeating, okay? Because you've got those numbers 137.
0.04
between 137.04 and 137.029, you know, before you get to 03, it's like that range of numbers there, where the fine structure constant falls, is actually dividing again into the phi ratio. You know? Do you know what I'm saying?
I totally get it. I'd like to know how it would look now. I'd love to know where that would go.
Yeah, as I said, the number won't be it. The number in the latitude, it won't produce that number now.
No,
I mean, it will to a certain number of decimal places, but not exactly the same. If we go to the next one, let's see what the next one is. I can't remember now what the sequence is. You see, now this is another thing. Okay, so the golden cut latitude, where it passes through G2, the second pyramid, is exactly 137.0359 raw qubits from the centre to the golden cut latitude. So it's those numbers again, but the first four decimal places. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
So wow. As if, and those numbers, it's like, have you ever seen that image, or that graphic by M.C. Escher, the drawing hands, where one hand's drawing the other one's drawing that one? It's kind of like that, really, the way these numbers are kind of, you know, revolving around this fine structure.
It totally is.
Around this golden cut latitude. And what's the next one? Yeah, that's just showing you the proof of the distance from the centre of the G2 to the golden cut latitude. It's 71.752 metres, which is 137.0359 raw qubits. Okay, let's go to the next one. Now, see, this is from a declassified NSA document, right? And this Lambros de Calamajos, or whatever his name is, I think he was a physicist. He says, if they but know the seventh digit of the fine structure constant, they are ages ahead of us. We know only the first five for sure and suspect the sixth. Now, that was in 1974, when we only knew the first five digits of the fine structure constant.
Right.
You know? And he was talking about communication with extraterrestrial intelligence. He says, if they but know the seventh digit, which we don't know, then they are ages ahead of us. But we do now. But that whoever devised the code back in 1980, which was only 6 years after this, they knew this golden cut latitude of numbers would generate a 12-digit number, 9 decimal places, in 2018. Let's look at the next one. Okay, so remember I told you about that film, that movie UFO, which starred Gillian Anderson, Ben Strathair. Okay, that was in 2018 as well, that movie, yeah?
It was.
And the movie is about a talented college math student finding a binary coded message as a result of a UFO encounter based on the O'Hare Airport incident in 2008, which contains the fine structure constant as a means of establishing...
It sounds a little bit like somebody had read the Rendlesham incident to me.
Yeah, but as I said, our book didn't come out until 2019, you know.
Yeah, but you were writing it in 2018, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I was writing it, I think I took about 4 years writing it, because it was mostly about Jim's, you know, what happened to him during the incident and in the aftermath.
Right.
But the last chapter was what I thought I'd write about the findings of the binary code, which would be a bridge onto the second and third books, see? So that's the reason why I was writing this last chapter in 2019, after this. But no one really knew about the code at that time. They didn't know my findings, what I'd found in the code. But and they didn't know anything about the fine structure constant, because we never said anything about it until the book was out. So during an interview in August 2018 by interviewer Robbie Graham, the director for the movie, Ryan Esslinger, was asked, what kind of research did you do for the movie? So this might answer what you was asking. Ryan Esslinger, NARCAP publishes technical reports on UFO sightings, including the O'Hare Airport sighting, and I also came across declassified documents that the NSA published online concerning potential methods of communication with other life forms. One document in particular talks about using things like the fine structure constant in our communications, which informed the decoding of the signal. I also consulted with an astrophysicist at Ohio State University, Paul Sutter, who fact-checked the script as much as you can fact-check a movie called UFO, During our discussion, the idea of using binary as a method of communication came up. Okay? So, yeah, I emphasise that part in italics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's a no-brainer because it was already said by Carl Sagan in 74.
Yeah, but as I said, this UFO movie came out in 2018, and, you know, it's too close to what has happened with it. I mean, it's actually happened, isn't it, with the binary code? All this, which
yeah,
was,
totally.
This was a fictional movie, but it's actually happened. So,
yeah.
Anyway, if we go to the next one. Yeah, this was part of an article, a short take on Ryan Eslinger, who made the movie. He says, the fine structure constant plays an important role throughout the film, right from its very beginning. At one point, discussing the constant with two scientists, it suggested that the constant may in fact be the same throughout space, but not time. That the constant might be variable proves important to possibly solving the much more complex communications received from the aliens, which in turn suggests, though this is never spoken by any character, that the aliens are not from a distant point in space, but in time, namely our own future. Now, it's as if I was meant to see that, you know, to then kind of make the connection with this kind of time travel hypothesis of us from the future.
Skunk works. Interesting that skunk works were involved.
Yeah, so is that the last one? I think that's the last graphic.
Yeah, that's the last
one. I think it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of phenomenal, all this. But as I said to you before, I said our book, the one I wrote with Jim Pennison, and us, actually, as far as the UFO community is concerned, we're cancelled. You know, they won't talk about our book on some of these UFO websites or forums. They won't really discuss that book. They won't even mention it. It's like it doesn't exist. And I think that when the code first came out, they were really kind of dismissing it as Jim having made it all up. You know, and don't touch it sort of
thing. Jim wouldn't know anything about of this. But not his bag of bananas.
No, Jim wouldn't have the patience to ever sit down. He doesn't read.
Right.
He wouldn't have the patience to sit down and devise this, and it's too complicated. You want to see all the rest of the things that just come out of it, and it's phenomenal, as I said. And the way it's pointing to the Sphinx and the Azores in the Atlantic.
Right. You know? Well, there's another whole other bag as well. So
yeah, no, it's as if whoever devised it is letting us know the answers to all these secrets we've kind of pondered over the last decade, seven decades.
So the last number in the binary was it 8100?
Yeah, 8100, and
it starts with 666 8100.
Yeah, but that's
and then it ends with 8100.
Yeah, that's part of the Giza Diagram timeline, which I'll have to talk about at some point. But, you know, so that I can explain that. But the 8100, it seems to be 8100 in the future. 8100.
So, you know, it's like I'm part of the community of UFO. And when I heard Jim say that you'd said that it wasn't a UFO, it wasn't aliens, it was from us from the future, you haven't actually said that. You've actually said that, who knows, but AI is something, but we could be part alien, part human. We could be a blend of everything. Who knows? In the future. I mean, we're in 2022. That's 8,000. That's a long way off.
It's logical, really, because you look at how fast our technology is advancing. Who knows what the future is going to be?
Well, and who knows what they've held back? They've held back so much.
Yeah.
You know, we know that.
So the phenomenon could be us from the future, this kind of hybrid kind of AI sort of revisiting the past.
And who's to say that we haven't gone to other planets by then?
Jim said to me that during his hypnosis, and he had some insight into what the code was saying, and And he said that he had the feeling, he just had the impression that even in that time, that when the code was supposed to have been sent back, whoever, wherever it is in the future, or whenever it is in the future, he said at that time, first contact was still being, it had not happened yet.
Allegedly.
Anyway,
But Peter is correct. Peter Coyle said it's all connected. High Brazil pyramids, New Grange, Stonehenge. I agree. I think everything is connected. And you prove that with some of your other stuff, which we'll have to go into next time.
Yeah, it I was going to say that people won't, as I said, people dismiss the code. They're still dismissing it. They won't touch it. It's just like a habit with them now. It's become a habit. Oh, don't touch that. Don't listen to Jim Pennison. Don't even talk about him. And of course, I'm associated by, well, I'm guilty by association,
right.
Sort of thing.
Association,
but
exactly.
But really, this shows that the code has something to give to people, and it's all mathematical. And when you think about it, mathematics is a universal language, and if we were going to be communicated by an higher intelligence, they'd use mathematics. They'd use a constant.
Right. Well, they've got your attention with this.
Yeah, but you see, most of us in life, we don't like math. You know, we felt intimidated by it at school, and we don't like it. We kind of stay away when we see numbers. But that's how the code authenticates itself, and it just shows you that the code
It totally does.
And so people should be looking into this instead of looking at more shiny objects in the sky. You know.
Well, I think both are interesting.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
I've had my own experiences, so yeah. That are irrefutable. But who's to say that that wasn't us from the future coming back? Who knows?
Yeah, we just don't know, do we? Yes, that is it. No. At the end of the day, that's what Jim said. What you just don't know.
But so, I do believe in UFOs and space people. I do believe in it.
Oh yeah, I do. I believe that there's a phenomenon there, but we just really haven't got all the answers yet. And
we don't. And I hope we never will, to be honest. Right, so we're wrapping this up. And
yeah,
I think we've got to a natural sort of edge. And I thank you so much. This has been amazing.
Thank you.
And it's nice to see you a little bit more relaxed. So I like the fact that you're home. And
yeah,
you're
I mean, it's not... I don't really feel relaxed trying to convey this because it is complicated, and I'm thinking I'm losing people along the way, and what's the point?
No.
But you know,
no, if you look at the chat, they knew what was going on. They understood.
Yeah,
what was going
they
on.
Did.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then when they come back and look later
and
on.
In the future, you know, the future. I tell people spiritually, the future isn't really set, so you never know what's going to happen in the future. So, you know, we don't know what this code came, you know, where it came from, who sent it, or who did it. Could have been us, could have been the future, could have been the past, could have been an alien race. We really don't know the answer to that. But like the, you know, like the scrolls from all the ancient tomes, they were locked up and they're not supposed to be known until a certain time in the future. So somebody who wrote something 1,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, also did the same thing that this binary code did.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, who's to say? What is all of our stuff from the past? Did it come from God, or did it come from an alien, or did it come from us in the future? We don't know the answer to any of those.
No.
Right?
No, we have very little answers. We know very little.
You're showing in this, guys, this is a book that he's writing that's going to come out in the future that you guys are going to want to take a look at when he gets it published. He's showing you that you can't deny the math.
Yeah.
Right.
Did I say before we go? I did tell you in the last interview that it's a strange thing about this code is that those seven sets of corners, they encapsulate so much information that can fill three volumes. I'm telling you, so much information that we know that these two books that I'm writing are going to be published, even though you keep asking, well, when are you going to publish it? When are you going to publish
it? I nag.
They are going to be published, and they're going to be in the public domain, and they'll go through the years into the future. And then when they find out how to manipulate time, they'll think, oh yeah, what about those seven sets of coordinates? All that information came from. Let's send them back. And then, do you know what I'm saying? It's like a loop.
Right, like a, it's a loop.
Where does
exactly.
it end? Where
and
does it begin?
That's been right. many movies.
They,
that's
you
been
know,
many movies.
They made a movie about that. Yeah, they did. The Prince of Darkness, which John Carpenter did, was that the guys in the future were sending a message on tachyons backwards in time to warn of the thing that happened. But the only reason that they sent it back in time was because the thing actually happened. So it had to
they
happen so they
that.
Would send the message back. So it was that weird paradox, like
that's
you're
ridiculous.
Saying. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
well,
I can give
Gary,
my eyes
when,
a rest. I can give my eyes a rest now because they're shot.
When
my eyes are shot.
Well,
that's why I'm wearing these
we're
bifocals.
Because we're all old. So, thank you.
Yeah.
When that book or those books are out,
finally,
then you can come back again. Then you can come back again. But in the meanwhile, I am going to continue nagging because apparently I'm really good at it.
That's okay. I'm fine. I've been nagged at loads of people throughout my life. So.
but thank you. And I'm looking forward to actually having Manu. I think it would be really fantastic if you and Manu would come and join us.
I love Manu's work. I love the guy.
You put me onto him. I didn't really know about him. So, I mean, in interim, but you know, you've made me realise that he's actually quite important to your story and vice versa. So I think it would be lovely. Next time you speak to him, would you please like offer an invitation that we would love to have you both on the show?
And before I forget, there's a guy named Jimmy Blanchett, okay, who I've been corresponding with, okay?
Do I need his name?
Jimmy Blanchett, BLANCHE.
I know how to spell it.
Double T E, yeah. So
I know
he,
how to spell it.
He's been sending me the math that he's been working out on this. What it is, he's created this contraption where he's able to send out signals into space and he's getting responses, but they're giving him mathematical information. And it relates to the code as well. And this is Jimmy
Blanchett. Of course
Blanchett.
It does!
He's been on coast to coast. And, I think if you get in touch with him, I can send you a link to his page.
That would be awesome. Manu first.
Yeah, Manu first. Manu is important.
I'd like you both to come on now. I think that would be kind of cool to see you two interact and listen to the way you talk to each other. Would be mind-blowing.
Sorry, Manu and Rob Nealon, because Rob Nealon is the one who's working with Manu at the moment. And he is a nice guy. I've talked to him last night. And those two, Manu and Rob, got new papers out about the Sphinx that people should read.
Secrets.
Yeah, yeah, don't give them away yet.
No more secrets.
Yeah.
All right, darling. I thank you so much from the heart of my bottom. And I have... thank you, everybody in who've been watching intently. And we look forward to seeing you again soon when your book comes out.
Yes, of course. Okay. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.
Yeah.
Be safe
out
there.
Bye, everyone.